You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 14th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live with no consideration whatsoever for Kim Kardashian's ass crack, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Glass.
Hey, this is not safe for work, Blue Gal. Yeah.
We're going to start with the good news.
There's good news this week?
There is some good news. We landed on a comet.
On a goddamn comet.
Earthlings landed a thing on a moving comet. I think that's awesome.
Well, okay. First of all, how's that for nonstick? Hey, how's that going there? Secondly, as we cracked up last night because, hey, harpoon guy, you had one job.
And he goes, hey, it's not rocket science. The hell it isn't. It is too rocket science.
This is technology. I'm kidding, of course. Yeah. This is technology that Herman Melville had down cold, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And apparently we landed a thing on a moving thing that's going 300 million miles away, which is amazing. And then it's like, well, you know, everything in space is moving. So,
oh,
you know, the moon is moving. Everything's moving. But we had to play catch up and fly up next to it and find the right spot. It was a really...
And then it didn't land in the right spot. You realize that today they found out that it's landed sort of in a crater in a shadow.
Yeah.
And so it's only going to get 90 minutes of sun instead of 6 hours of sun a day.
Yeah.
And... All right, but you're talking to a freaking comet.
It's a freaking comet with laser beams on its head. Okay?
Right. Let's send a shark up with laser beams on its freaking head to talk to the comet.
And I have no idea who it was on Twitter I saw saying this, but what you tell the comet is, that's okay, honey. We'll try again in 30 or 40 minutes. Which I thought was hilarious. Just hilarious.
Lord.
Because it is magnificent. It is an awesome accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
It is it reminds me in some ways of the Grand Tour when we had a satellite taking pictures of Jupiter and Saturn and all the way out.
Yeah.
It's just a tremendous accomplishment. And you know, we can do stuff. We really, it's the European Space Agency, because they're not foolish. Yeah, space travel is good for everyone.
Yep.
Space exploration is good for everyone.
And what did Bill Nye, the science guy, say? It was one deluxe coffee per taxpayer.
Yeah, that's it.
For 13 years of space exploration.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And you know, it kills me that I have to tell our kids, you know, that there was a time when we had manned space travel.
There was a time, and we, the only thing that motivated us though, was competition with the Russians. And so unless it's a war thing that gets John McCain a hard on, we ain't going to do it. Yeah. We're not going to build a bridge. We're not going to build a space station. We're not going to do anything. So,
well, I'm hearing rumors of space Ebola.
Space Ebola.
Yeah,
and that means we have to shut down the borders with the moon.
It's space ISIS. Yeah. There's ISIS on Mars. We should go.
All right.
But that's
a lot of people have been talking this week about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and how awful it is and how non-transparent it is. And there's bad for labor. It's bad for the environment and so forth. However,
yes.
Barack Obama did apparently get a climate change resolution with China.
Yeah, he did.
Which is awesome.
Yes, it is. Anything, any movement on the subject is awesome.
Isn't that sad? But uh-huh. It's true.
It is.
But this completely calls the Republicans bluff.
No, it doesn't.
Because, well, for 10, 15 years,
uh-huh.
Republicans and climate change deniers have been saying, well, why do anything about climate change if China won't? I mean, if a huge economy that is China
won't
do anything, it won't budge.
Sure.
For us to damage our economy to do something about it is just stupid.
Uh-huh.
And so China agrees that, you know, they can no longer proceed with air that looks like a dirty lake.
Yeah. Yep.
That's pretty much it. And James Inhofe, who's, you know, that's who you're going to go to find out the stupidest climate change denying you can possibly find. Well, you can't trust China now, can you?
Yeah. Well,
they're not going to do what they say. All right. Well, tough shit. We're going to do something.
Well, and after we get done with the... you can't trust China. It'll be the next excuse and the next and the next.
Yeah.
And behind it all is, well, but who really cares? Because it's all a hoax anyway.
And it's about money. It's about clinging to dirt for money.
I mean the climate change deniers' ultimate fallback position is, well, it's all a hoax anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change is a hoax. The socialists cooked up to something, make scientists rich. I can't even follow the reasoning anymore. But it's just you're arguing with the same batch of crazy people on every issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't – this is the – I know I don't want to get too far ahead, but there is this persistent liberal delusion that we'll talk about in a little while.
Go ahead and talk about it now. I think it's on the top of your list. Go ahead.
It is. It's on the top of my mind today because I don't just listen to – I don't just sample right-wing talk radio, even though there's a rich and plentiful supply where we live. But occasionally I raise the antenna all the way above the horizon and get a whisper of something like Tom Hartman, mm-hmm. someone smart and competent and well-researched and articulate. And Tom's book is on our bookshelf, and I often praise him and steal from him openly on this podcast when I blog. I cite him a lot. So I respect what he does. Tom, if you're listening, and I know you are, A, we should be on your show.
Yeah.
B, really, really, we should be on your show. But B, you know I love you, right? You know I love you. I love what you do. Love the whole thing. It's great. What you got going there, awesome. But here's the thing that you and liberals like you, my dear liberals, brothers and sisters, keep missing.
Mm-hmm.
You keep assuming that we're in this arena and we're having a public debate in front of a large number of undecided but reasonably well-informed people. And if you could just get the words right, if you could just articulate the number of times I've heard people like Tom Hartman, but Tom Hartman today say, you know, next we're going to expose Rush Limbaugh's something or other. We're going to expose James Imhoff's. We're going to expose the racism of the Republican Party. Well, you don't need to expose it. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. Rush Limbaugh's been on the air for 25 fucking years. Everyone knows his shtick. You either are appalled by it, or you think he's God, or you're just one of the dopes in the middle who wants everyone to get along and doesn't want to make a decision. So the idea that we are in an arena in front of an audience, and if you could just formulate your argument well enough and expose the insanity of Republican stance on pretty much any issue clearly enough, you're going to win the argument.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow you're going to sway the audience.
Yep.
Dude, there is no audience. It's an empty arena. There's no one listening to us. All 40 people who listen to your show, Tom, and I know it's more than that, way more than that, all 40 people agree with you already. Conservatives who are on your show will never be convinced by you.
All right, let me ask you something, Dr. Uh-huh, Professor. Sure, interest you.
Absolutely.
How, if you were Tom Hartman.
Yes.
And you wanted to do a Tom Hartman show.
Yes, I do.
How would you frame the show?
Here's how I'm going to do it. Now, mind you, this is me giving Tom Hartman a dictate.
I don't care. Really. I don't care. Yeah, I want you. You have posited a criticism of Tom Hartman.
I have.
And so how do you make it better? How do you fix that?
Tom, here's what you got to do. The reason you are failing to persuade anyone is that every time you talk to 400 people or 4,000, whatever your audience is, and I'm in your audience, I'm a fan. Every time you make an argument to 100 people about the Republican Party is just wrong, and look how obvious it is. You're doing what, as we said before, doing what Tom John Stewart does, but without a laugh track.
Mm-hmm.
You point a camera, you say, look at this absurd, hypocritical nonsense they're pulling again today. Fine. Every time you say that to 100 people, 100,000 people hear Chuck Todd come on and say, not on your show, but sort of roll over you with a much bigger media machine. And the first three words out of his mouth are always going to be, but the Democrats. It's always the same argument. It doesn't matter how clever your argument is. If a giant media machine right behind you comes along to say, well, it doesn't really matter if they're crazy, but because the Democrats are crazy, too. It doesn't matter if the conservatives are lying. Liberals lie, too. You have to go after that machine. Because until you start breaking up the middle, until you start breaking up the vast number of people who either don't give a shit about voting, don't give a shit about policy, and never pay attention to anything, I think they're a write-off, but maybe you disagree. But you have to go after the equivocators, the people who gut your argument every time you make it, because it doesn't matter how clever you are. If the only 10 people left in the auditorium are undecided, and the person who comes out right after you is not Rush Limbaugh, it's not Sean Hannity. The person who comes out on after right after you is George Stephanopoulos. And what's George Stephanopoulos' message? It's, well, you know, Tom, great argument, but both sides are equally wrong. Then you lose. Every time you lose, you're going to lose that argument every time because the people who don't want to make a decision, who don't want to hear that the Republican Party is evil and has to be put down like a rabid animal, are never going to hear your message. And Stephanopoulos and Chuck Todd and David Gregory and on and on and on, give them an easy out. They give them an easy way to declare it a tie and walk away from the argument. And you're never going to win Republicans over. So focus on Chuck Todd. Focus your entire fucking show on Chuck Todd. Focus it on people like that. Focus it on David Brooks. Focus on David Gregory. Focus it on the people who make a living out of pumping this no-labels bilge into our arguments. Go after them. Make them the subject of your... Assume Republicans are crazy. Everyone does. Everyone knows it. You don't have to keep proving it to your audience over and over again. We get it. They're nuts. But what are you going to do about it? And the strategy has to be go after their enablers. Go after the people who are driving their goddamn getaway car. That's what works. And if every media outlet, if every liberal media outlet would do that for a month, maybe it would make a difference. Because nothing else has made any difference. Not a thing. Nothing we've done has made a dent in our media narrative. So you're going to have to go after the people who enable the liars. And that's my suggestion to Tom Hartman.
Okay. I want to connect what you just said about Chuck Todd and all of the centrists in the media. And also James Inhofe.
Okay.
Do you remember a movie, and it was also a book in the 60s called The Magic Christian?
I do. Ringo Starr.
Ringo Starr and Peter Sellers.
Yep, yep.
And I didn't realize this, but John Cleese was in it.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And I didn't realize that. And also, Graham Chapman was in it and uncredited.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
I learned something new today. Thank you. Yeah.
But you remember the scene where the eccentric millionaire fills up a huge vat with the smelliest stuff on earth? I'm not going to get into what is there, but, you know, it's animal excrement and a bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. And he has this huge vat of poop. And he puts thousands of banknotes in the vat in the middle of the city. And starts attracting a crowd of onlookers and yelling out, "Free money!"
Yeah.
And they get in it, and they wade through it, and they're willing to wade through it. And it's, you know, they're willing to walk through shit for a 10-pound note.
Yes, they are.
And there are people, you know, it makes the world go round because of that. And, you know, that's supposed to be satire, though, Chuck Todd.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and all I'm saying is we are outnumbered against a superior force, but the superior force is divided. We, you know, I hate to get all Nixonian, but we are the U.S. versus the Soviet Union and China.
Yeah.
You have to pit them against each other. You have to find a way to make them fight among each other. You have to divide them. And as long as conservatives can get away with lying, with just lying. I mean, just this last election was a referendum. It wasn't a referendum on a policy. It was a referendum on the Republican strategy of absolutely sabotaging the government and then running on government doesn't work. Now, their fingerprints are all over everything, but you wouldn't know it by reading the New York Times or watching any Sunday show or watching any mainstream. You would never know the Republican Party is entirely responsible for the dysfunction of the government. All you hear from anybody anywhere is both sides, both sides, both sides, both sides. So since it is futile to take on conservatives head on because they are just gone, the only other alternative you have, the only other place there is left to go after are the people who enable them. So you have to focus your fire where you can do the most good. You have to focus your attention, your resources, your scorn, your photoshopping skills, whatever you have, on the middle, on the centrist. And here's where I draw some encouragement. John Stewart is starting to notice this.
A lot of people are starting to notice this.
Stephanie Miller, bless her heart. When she's on there with Charlie Pierce, who is on there basically doing my shtick if I were on the Stephanie Miller show, which, by the way, I really should be. Really, really should.
You mention that all the time.
I do.
So people are starting to tweet that, which is really cool.
And I'm going to keep to and now that we have our own promo based on They Live, thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin Holzinger. Yes.
We're just going to keep banging on the door until we're let in. And I realize it's a small door in a small market. But even Stephanie Miller is starting to notice that Chuck Todd is the problem.
I wonder if it's that Chuck Todd is so blatantly this way.
Well, also mentioning Chris Matthews. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Pierce's favorite phrase, obvious merit hire Luke Russert.
Yeah.
Who's just come out of the womb saying both sides.
Yep.
So there is some, I take some solace in the fact that there are people out there who are catching on, and I don't want to sound too immodest, but I've been blogging for 10 years now.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
You've been literally blogging for 10 years. I have an anniversary coming early next year, but I say 10 years because I'm really 9.5 sounds so childish. but my first week of blogging was the first couple of weeks. You go back and look, it's about both sides. It's about David Brooks. It's about how completely corrupted the media narrative, because nobody holds Republicans accountable anymore. All they ever say is both sides, both sides, both sides. And believe me, back in 2005, that was a voice in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. I mean, liberal bloggers, Digby was saying things like that. I'm sure Atrios was saying things like that. But that idea that the real problem, the root of the problem, was the inherent corruption of the referees in this fight. Not the people on the opposite corner who were slugging it out with. The referees are bought and paid for. And every time there's a call, every time the bad guy did something illegal, they throw the flag at us. That's the problem. That was the problem during the run-up to the Iraq War. That was the problem with deficits. Every single problem is the same narrative. It's like David Broder never died. Mm-hmm. His spirit infuses everything. And the fact that people now get it, some of them actually get it, that, oh, holy crap, the problem isn't Laura Ingraham. The problem is that people put Laura Ingraham up and say, you know, it's pretty much both sides. And there was a really good example of that this week mm-hmm. with, I got to skip through my notes here just
Ron
for a
Fournier?
Second. Ron Fournier. Yep. Who just said, well, the populists in both parties are, you know, and the populists in both parties he named were Ron Paul. Mm-hmm.
Ron Paul or Rand Paul?
I'm sorry, Rand Paul. Self-anointed ophthalmologist. Mm-hmm. And Rand douchebag and person who would never be elected to office if people would scan past Charlie Pierce's 5-minute rule mm-hmm. and start listening to what he's saying at the 5:01 mark, which is invariably nuts.
And he is going to lose because of that, because he will maybe not survive a debate. He won't.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But Rand Paul was the Republican populist, mm-hmm. and Elizabeth Warren was the liberal populist.
You know,
Elizabeth Warren, Harvard-educated professor, has spent her entire career
of economics,
on economics, right, and specifically corporate malfeasance. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, well, you know, pretty much these two populists, they're both sort of the same kind of thing, and that's
the narrative that everybody wants for 2016.
Right, and that's the narrative that
who's going to mess that up? Mike Huckabee.
Yeah.
Because he's going to win Mike Huckabee's going to run and win Iowa, and that's going to just mess up the whole narrative.
Yeah. Maybe. No, it won't. It won't, because this is the problem. You have just crystallized the problem.
Yeah.
Nobody cares what Republicans – it will not matter at all what Republicans do. It doesn't matter what they do mm-hmm. because no matter how fucking crazy they are, it doesn't matter if Mike Huckabee ran on a ticket with – the risen remains of David Broder.
Saying we have to protect chicken eggs because that's life.
If he ran
– wouldn't matter.
If he ran with the bones of George Wallace swinging over his head, screaming about banshees and haints and the horrors of the –
both sides, Driftglass.
The narrative coming out of Meet the Press would be, well, you know, both sides.
Yeah, so, Michael Moore. That's the thing. Michael Moore
exactly.
So does so, crazy things too.
But this is the reflex we always have, which is, can you believe what those crazy conservatives are doing? Yeah. And the answer is, of course I can. I've been watching it for 30 years. Of course you can. Stop, dear liberals. Please stop looking with alarm. Every time you look at a Republican getting away with murder, you're looking at a cop not doing his job, a media police officer, a media referee refusing to do his job, refusing to do his or her job of pointing at it and saying they're the problem because they're crazy. The problem is the cops are on the take. And until we break them up and make them either quit, drive them into the wilderness, humiliate them in public, walk up to them at coffee shops, shove a camera in their face and say, why the hell do you keep letting them get away with murder? This is going to keep going on. And you and I don't have anywhere near the platform necessary to do this. But back in 2004, the entire liberal community was united more or less on the narrative that Iraq is a disaster. We have been lied to. The president of the United States is a criminal, and he's getting away with it. And every liberal lined up behind that narrative. Every single one.
even the ones who we don't get along at all anymore, we all lined up along that narrative. We all demanded as one voice that this particular flaw in our system be addressed. And it was. It actually got Marcos Melitzis on Meet the Press a couple of times. Mm-hmm. If we as a group line up and say the refs are corrupt, the cops are on the take, the problem is that the enforcers of the debate, the people who are setting the terms of the debate, are themselves so horribly corrupted that we can't have debates anymore. And I think it would make a difference. I really do. Because if we don't, we keep slipping into the Tom Hartman mode of, well, look at Mike Huckabee. Well, fuck Mike Huckabee. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. If an otter won, it wouldn't matter. Because Chuck Todd would still enforce the overarching meta-narrative of whoever the hell the Democrats are running, it's probably going to be a horse race.
Yep.
Anyway, that's my take on that.
Gets them really excited.
Yes. Well, it's something they can report on and right. Something they can all sit around the table and agree on.
I wanted to point out the 70-50 today timeline that you had yesterday. Do you remember that? 70 years ago, the press agreed not to mention FDR's disability.
Yeah.
50 years ago, the press agreed not to mention JFK's affairs.
Yeah.
Today, the press agrees not to mention that the GOP base is insane and that the Republican Congress is a traitorous blockade to a working government.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So, all right. I wanted to talk a little bit about Fox and Friends. not standing aghast. That's not what I'm doing.
No, I love you. I really take a lot of pleasure in this podcast, and I love talking to a smart person. Every
I am not standing aghast at anything Fox and Friends does, especially after they get skewered so well on. I think that's one of the things that Saturday Night Live really does well is the Fox and Friends, and the corrections on Fox and Friends are just so funny. But I noticed, I watched a little bit of the Ed show this week, where Ed had on a gentleman from the Communications Workers of America Union talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And he was making the kind of arguments that Elizabeth Warren makes, which is a Trans-Pacific Partnership is going to be very, very bad for the environment.
Right.
It's going to be very bad for workers both in the United States and in Asia. And it's basically a corporate grab for regulations and agreements that prevent anyone from improving the environmental impact and the labor impact of all of this trade that's going on. And what I find interesting about that is we assume in all of that argument that government is just completely unable to regulate anything. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the case. But here is this argument. Oh, and then the lack of transparency, that this is being agreed to in secret. Arguments or disagreements that come up in regards to the Trans-Pacific Partnership will be decided by a private court.
Yeah, in a quiet room.
In a hidden room.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, isn't this really bad? And he made a really good argument. Well, the next day on Fox and Friends, here was this independent congressman from Maine. What is his name again? King?
Is it Angus King?
Angus King.
Yeah, yeah.
And Angus, the way the story was presented at Crooks and Liars was really important, which is Angus King called out to Fox and Friends. They were talking about, oh, isn't it terrible that this wonk who actually wrote a lot of Obamacare is calling voters stupid, and isn't that terrible, and all this stuff was done. But the argument keeps coming up, and it's exactly the same argument that the guy on Ed's show the day before made about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I was just kind of stymied by it, that it was, you know, this is all done in secret, and the American people don't know what's really going on with the passage of this bill, and it's all going to be decided in secret. And each argument that they were making was just a boilerplate from the day before, when this person on Ed's show was just actually making a cohesive argument against Trans-Pacific Partnership. And I wondered if, you know, I'm going to sound like a Fox News hostess and say, you know, I'm just wondering
just
if all of this is related to Benghazi.
Just ask him the question.
There's some intern in Fox News who's just listening around and typing up argument and then pasting in Obamacare to whatever is being said so that Fox and Friends can read it off their teleprompters. Related to that.
Yes.
Ted Cruz got an earful this week.
Yeah, he did.
On Facebook.
He did.
from Republicans. And I got it. You know, you may not want to give them credit, but I want to give credit where credit is due, in that a number of Republicans on Ted Cruz's Facebook page said, "I'm a Republican. I supported you, and now I'm ashamed of you because you've taken money from Comcast and turned around and are against net neutrality, and you don't know what you're talking about, or you're just a bought and paid whore for the telecom companies." Ted Cruz said net neutrality is the Obamacare of the internet. Again, let's plug in that Obamacare, right, and just make it the argument. It's the Benghazi, you know, and then you're done. Right.
It's the Benghazi of internet.
But a number of Republicans got after him on that. And a number of them mentioned, "I'm a Republican and I'm in the tech industry, and you don't know what you're talking about." And you said to me this morning that you think it's the, "Hey, wait a minute, that's my porn" argument.
That's my porn. See, this affects me directly. No, wait a minute. My porn is going to be downloading slow now. I would rename this Not Fast and Furious, by the way.
Not Fast and Furious. That's good.
I'd put that on the table and we'd wordsmith that, you know, for an hour or two, so we got something better. I read through the same timeline very briefly. I've been kind of busy the last couple of weeks. But I read down long enough to see that people were mocking him on Benghazi and mocking him on other things.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a lot of liberals in the timeline.
There were.
And I'm willing to believe that, because Ted Cruz is so deeply hated by so many people, that a bunch of Republicans who work in the tech industry, a bunch of conservatives, the reason I don't think they're Republicans is I don't know Republicans who self-identify as Republicans anymore. They're all constitutional conservatives and independents.
Yeah. I'm an independent. Yes. Okay.
But yeah, sure. I believe the fact that if something directly affects them personally,
well, and they're outside, their information does not come from Fox News. It comes from work. It comes from their own experience.
Right.
Then I think you can break through. I think you can break through on an issue that they care about. Yeah.
Yeah. On this issue, absolutely. But this is these are the Tea Partiers that Matt Taibbi interviewed, sort of, who were appalled by all the government waste and appalled by all the mooching and appalled by all the welfare. And he was like, "You're on Social Security and Medicare, aren't you?" "Yeah, you got me." But that's me. That's me. It's okay when it's me. You're screwing with my porn again. You're screwing with my wheelchair.
And then we talk about abortion. Yeah. And then we talk about rape life of the mother and me and my daughter and my, you know, you don't understand my daughter. She was in a very special situation where she absolutely, there was no other option open to her. Well, what about all the other women who didn't have an option open to them?
They're sluts. They're all immoral except my daughter, who's an angel.
Yeah.
She's a freaking angel. Just had a bad circumstance. That's all.
And so, absolutely.
When you're cutting into them downloading, you know, Jenna Jameson at the speed they want to download. Sure. I can understand them being pissed about that and calling names and even remembering for a moment that there's a thing called government regulation, which is where this all started. This was Barack Obama saying we should regulate the internet like a utility and everybody should be treated the same. It's pretty straightforward. And Ted Cruz, again, broke out his boilerplate, did a copy paste. You know, it's the Benghazi of whatever. It's the Obamacare of whatever. It's the Fast and Furious of whatever. It's the IRS scandal, none of which are Obama scandals or are trivial compared to everything they were okay with during the Bush administration. But it's again, this whole cycle is them setting the agenda.
Yep.
We are just reacting to their crazy. And, I'm tired of it. Look out. There was an article in the New York Times that isn't in our notes anywhere. It's called Liberal Donors Looking 6 Years Ahead.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And I will be writing about this this weekend, perhaps.
Is this the Liberal Donor Conference where they didn't invite Hillary?
I don't know if they didn't invite Hillary.
That was there was a Liberal Donors Conference. It's actually up at Crooks and Liars. Liberal Donors Conference. They invited Elizabeth Warren. They invited Joe Biden. Which whoever wrote this article at Crooks and Liars said, you know, the vice president from BNNA Bank was invited to come and speak to this liberal donor group. Uh-huh. But it's the Ready for Warren people.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you know, are there.
On it. No, this was George. It has to be the same conference because it's.
It is. It's just a minute. I'm going to look it up.
But my point is. holy crap, they're liberal philanthropists.
Yeah. Wow.
Holy crap, there really are rich liberals who this is the part that's kind of appalling, who are unfazed by this election because it doesn't affect them.
No, of course. We're bankers. We don't give a shit. That was what they said last week in Kansas.
No one's going to take my health care away. No one's going to, in theory, I care about all these people, but in practice, it's a setback.
Well, at least they're they're on the right side in terms of most of the time.
But when I hear liberal philanthropists and donors gathered in Washington.
Yeah, this is the Democracy Alliance. It's called the Democracy Alliance, Washington's Mandarin Oriental Hotel. Uh-huh. And last year's meeting was a love fest for Elizabeth Warren.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that's it. Yeah.
You know where they didn't gather this year?
Who?
Any place but Washington. You know where they didn't gather? They didn't gather at the Olive Garden in Springfield.
Right, right.
And ask if it's the problem with the liberals, the problem with we have with our movement. No, tell me, George Soros, we don't fund our grassroots enough. Republicans pour like syrup over pancakes, billions of dollars all over everybody. This is why lunatics, outright nut jobs like Warner Todd Houston, have jobs. This is why Michelle Malkin can afford a house. This is they have this large bench of crazy people that they absolutely support with all kinds of tricks and all kinds of think tanks and all kinds of ways of getting the material support. They prop up their infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Our liberal philanthropists meet in Washington and talk about other things.
Yeah.
And it's their money. They can do whatever they want with it. But it is you are killing your own. You're eating your seed corn.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not helping grassroots bloggers, grassroots activists, people like, frankly, my wife and I out here with our microphone and our little platform, get a little bit of a bigger platform and a little bit of a bigger voice because we've earned it. We deserve it. We are the movement. We're the people who are talking about all the things that are really important years before it ever dawns on you that these things are important.
Mm-hmm.
And it baffles me that you're 6 blocks from Chuck Todd and you're 2,000 miles away from us.
Yeah, yeah.
And that really troubles me.
Well, I'm sorry, but I think that Netroots Nation should be in Washington, D.C. every year.
I absolutely.
So, I mean that's how we are democratizing by having it around the country where people can get to and activists can join in. Go ahead and have satellite meetings with a hookup.
Sure.
But have the meeting with all the big names right where they can drive over a bridge from their house and meet and get attention. And
No. Luke, I think we should have it in Phoenix in the summer. I think that's a much better idea. Or Las Vegas, where it's 170 degrees in the summer. I think it's a brilliant idea because that's fair. Let's be fair. And I get the impulse, but the reason CPAC attracts people who are actually hitters, they always attract the candidates.
Because they always have it in Virginia.
Because they have it in goddamn Virginia every year.
Yeah.
It's predictable. They know who's there. They go after the people who are the biggest voices and the loudest voices, and they put the lunatic grassroots people who are absolutely vital to their ongoing movement, to their big plan, in touch directly with Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich. There's zero distance, social distance between those people and the first group and the second at these conventions. We don't do that in the left.
I wanted to mention something. Speaking of the democratization of social media.
Yeah.
There's now a thing called Newsmax TV, which is basically a YouTube channel.
Yeah. I remember what it used to be about.
Guess who was on it today? Guess who was interviewed today on Barack Obama's failure as a leader and as a visionary?
I couldn't begin to guess.
Oh, yes, you could. You could guess who would have lots of words to talk about technology and also about ideas, because he's a big ideas guy.
Newt Gingrich.
Yes.
Yeah. But again, why are we surprised? The right wing came up with another venue to put another lunatic on camera.
Yeah.
Shock. Here I am. This is my shock face. You can't see it because it's the
radio. It's all the democratizing that we're doing is also available to the other side. What's not available to them, frankly, and this is something that Ted Cruz should have known better, tech brain trust. The tech brain trust is not with the conservative movement.
No.
So I went and looked up Deborah Sanger, who's one of the people. She's one of the two leaders at this liberal thing in Washington, D.C. She's a Brandeis graduate. What bloggers need to do, apparently, is go into residential and commercial real estate development. And then...
yes.
You can start a family foundation that whose mission is to support nonprofits working to make structural change. Isn't that interesting?
And we are the structure.
And good for her. But yeah. But why isn't she sending us money, I think was the question you were asking.
Well, it doesn't have to be us. But the fact that you can't find a liberal radio station to save your soul in 90% of this country is just appalling.
Yeah.
It's just and that is simply, really and truly, simply a matter of money.
Yep.
It is a matter of buying station, buying time, getting talent on the air. It's money. It's just money. And it's a lot, but it's not overwhelming. I mean, you're not talking about buying the entire Skynet. You're not talking about buying the Rupert Murdoch empire. You're talking about buying a couple of radio stations here and there. And if you have a gigantic checkbook, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing you do is not put the idiots in charge of it who you put in charge of Air America to drive it into the ground. Mm-hmm. Air America was a great talent training ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had everybody on there.
Well, and you have a lot more bandwidth, I mean, literal bandwidth on which to share Air America.
Yeah.
You know, and I have to say, I want to do a shout out to Netroots Radio.
Yes.
Justice Putnam every week puts out amazing liberal content on the internet. And we're part of that. We're very grateful that he's chosen us to be on his lineup. He works hard at it. And so you can go to Netroots Radio and listen to a lot of liberal content. And it's just available to you for free on your desktop or player or whatever. And Stitcher Radio is great. And there are just all kinds of ways to get liberal content out there that, you know, Air America, you know, like you said, it was running the ground. But they also were limited by the amount of bandwidth that was available. It's not that wasn't available. That's available now.
They had a sense of team.
Mm-hmm.
They really did have a sense of this is a destination. You put this on this station all day and you listen all day. And there's people and it really is that intimate radio thing where you're with them all day long. And there's similar stuff out there. If you stream, if you happen to have the technical capacity to if you have Sirius XM in your car, then you can do that. But I'm just thinking about the people who are not streaming audio on their phone. Who are not streaming it in their car, the people we want to reach, the people who are just zipping around town listening to AM radio. And there is no AM radio alternative. There's no AM progressive alternative in most of this country.
To Rush Limbaugh, exactly.
And there just isn't. And there's no conversation. I mean, the thing I like about Hal Sparks, for example, despite the fact that he has massive technical problems every week, and it's almost comical the predictability with which his stuff is going to fall apart.
Driftglass. He likes technical problems.
I know he does. He's addicted to trying. You know, he's
good for him.
He's an early adopter, and that means that he's going to try to plug this thing in this thing, and oops, we don't have audio today. And he's unafraid to do that, which I think is years behind a microphone teaches you that, you know, so what? You screwed up. That big deal. You'll be back next week. But there's a small community of people who really like to listen to him talk and take their phone calls and engage them and have a conversation. And the thing about liberals outside of large cities, which is definitely what we are, is there's no hearth for us. There's no fire that we sit around and tell stories and exchange ideas as out and proud liberals.
Actually is drinking liberally in Springfield. We just never have time to go because we're parents of young children. Someday we will.
There's that, but there's not. That's the matter of convenience.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can make time.
You're talking about Air America Radio. You're talking about.
I'm talking about some driver, some way of massing our numbers, amassing our message in a way that forces our message into the mainstream, demands an answer from, I hate to say it because I say it over and over, Chuck Todd, demands that Chuck Todd sit down and answer the following question.
Well, but even when Chuck Todd is on Stephen Colbert, he's not asked that question.
Exactly.
This is, you know, not happening. I don't know how you make that happen because he was asked that question on Facebook.
Yeah.
He said, he said, well, you guys are just rude and not and off topic.
Right.
And he ignores it. So
he won't answer, and no one will.
Yep.
And all I'm saying is until that question becomes
the only question out there, because it's so obvious, everybody has to know. It's as obvious bringing it full circle, Drift Glass, yes, as Kim Kardashian's ass crack.
Oh, I see what you did there. Great job, Blue Gal.
I promised myself I wasn't going to mention that during the show, but you brought me around.
I'm sorry.
There you go. Hey, I want to do a call out to our listeners for our Thanksgiving show before we close.
Okay.
Thanksgiving's coming up, and traditionally we do a letter show. We would love to have letters from our listeners. If you don't know what to write to us about, we'd like you to hear this letter. It's from our friend of the show, Robert, and he wrote us and said, "I was thinking about how to stand up to moneyed interests, and a phrase I keep mumbling to myself is your phrase, chop wood and carry water. You know, before elections, chop wood, carry water. After elections, chop wood, carry water."
Uh-huh. You want to tell them where that comes from?
It's Buddhism, basically. Yeah. You know, it's before enlightenment, the laundry, after enlightenment, the laundry.
Yeah, exactly.
It's keep yourself grounded. "I have oddly never heard this idiom before last week. Ah. It makes sense and is self-evident. Can you give some pointers on where the wood should be stacked and how much water we will need? As I see 2016 prospects, I am wondering how does a politician or candidate circumvent the, I got more money for you than you do, therefore I win, status quo? How does Bernie or Elizabeth get a media presence? And more importantly, how do they get to stay on their message with corporate media?" Uh-huh. And you talk about your campaign experiences in the past, and I would love to hear from our listeners about their campaign experiences in the past as well.
Uh-huh.
"Social media will play a dominant role, but do you see anything else playing a factor? I think that some of the Occupy Wall Street techniques need to be implemented, especially the every voice being heard." Well, we want your voice heard out there.
Yeah.
And we would like to know how you will be chopping wood and carrying water for what is right in the future months and years. Uh-huh. So what does working for the common good mean to you? And those are just some ideas, but write to us about whatever you want at proleftpodcast@gmail.com with the subject line Thanksgiving Show. Mm-hmm. And we will be reading letters on the air. And thank you very much.
And remember, this is a contest. So
no, it's not a contest.
No, it's not. Your letter better be really good. No.
We reserve the right to edit your letters for time, we look forward to hearing from you. Each week, post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Steve. And Steve is, I'm just going to say, in my personal opinion, Steve is just gorgeous. He is in the prime of life and is just one of these really beautiful, beautiful cats. Check him out at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties are pleased to announce that scientists have finally heard a comet purr.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University. First of all, we want to dedicate this issue of Science Fiction University to a friend of the show, Frank, and his wife, Lori. Frank contributed to Science Fiction University a few weeks ago, and they're facing some health problems in their family, and we just want them to know we're thinking about them.
Yeah.
And all of you that are out there who support the podcast, donate to the podcast, write into the podcast, whatever it is.
Hate the podcast.
Hate the podcast and let us know. Mm-hmm. All of you, we consider all of you to be part of our circle, and we think about you often. And so we just want you to know that. Mm-hmm. This week's Science Fiction University is from another friend of the podcast, from Magnolia E-Publishing. He's contributed before many times. Five movies, Driftglass.
Uh-huh.
These are science fiction movies, pop culture, cult movies, And there are five of them. He provides three clips for each movie, audio right. clips from the movie. Mm-hmm. And you have to guess what the movie is.
All right.
So I'm going to play three clips, short clips, really, from the first movie. This is number one. Ready?
Right.
Okay.
Ready.
Here we go.
It's time again. In the end, we don't decide these things, you know. The planets do.
I have no idea which version it is mm-hmm. or which iteration. I think there were 23 of these movies. but it was Halloween.
That's right.
I'm pretty sure it was Halloween.
And you recognize the John Carpenter music,
yeah.
I imagine. Yeah.
No, that I cannot honestly say I've seen one movie all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Donald Pleasance is in them. I know that Jamie Lee Curtis got her career screaming in them. But that music is just such a cultural artifact. Whether you like it or not, you know it when you hear it. So.
Well, this is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Ah.
And I think the reason that Magnolia ePublishing chose this one is because he says, actually horror, but it does have robots in it.
Oh, well then.
1982.
Oh, okay.
All right. So here is number two. And I will give you a hint, Drift Class. You and I have seen this movie together.
Aha. Uh-huh.
All right. So here are three clips from this movie.
I'm Anna, by the way. What's your name?
John. John Murdoch.
You are confused, aren't you? Frightened. That's all right. I can help you.
Who is this?
I am a doctor. Now you must listen to me. You have lost your memory. There was an experiment. Something went wrong. Your memory was erased. Do you understand me?
No, I don't understand. What the hell is going on here?
This is the machine the strangers use to amplify their thoughts. The machine that changes their world. You must take control of it. You must make the machine yours. I know you can beat them, John.
Oh, yeah. I love this movie. Love this movie. Way too many people haven't seen it. It's called Dark City.
Yeah.
It's a terrific flick. It's came out right around the same time as Matrix, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And got sort of buried by it. But it's a wonderful movie. It's got Kiefer Sutherland in it.
And he's really good in it. He really is.
Yeah. And it has a plot that makes a little more sense than human beings turning into batteries.
Yeah.
Which is the big flaw in the Matrix, because that doesn't make a damn bit of sense. But it's a terrific movie. I highly recommend you go rent
that and take a look at it.
That's Rupert Sewell, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Rufus Sewell.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite actors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's very good. He's very good in Gladiator.
He wasn't in Gladiator.
No, he wasn't in Gladiator. That's the other one. Who was in Gladiator? From? Johnny Cash was in Gladiator.
He was. See, this is what happens when we stress
our my brain is working
out.
Right now.
Yeah. We've been at this a little while. We've had some equipment problems. So
yeah,
we're
big time.
It's sort of way later than we thought it would be.
Yeah, hey, but hey, Drift Class.
That would be not River Phoenix, but...
Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Who's also a wonderful actor. But they could play brothers.
Uh-huh.
You know that?
Rufus Sewell.
Yeah. Rufus Sewell and Joaquin Phoenix could play brothers in a movie. They could.
They totally could. They totally could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. So, number three. Here we go.
I didn't get to the last part. I have no idea. The first two clips are meaningless to me. Mm-hmm. But the third part is iconic. That's that's from the Warriors.
Yeah.
Sometime in the late 70s. It's Gangs of New York, go to war one night.
That's right.
And the clicking is bottles.
Yes, it is.
Somebody rolling up the beach, go, and it's warriors come out to play. And even if you've never seen the movie, you probably have heard that.
You have heard that, sure, sure. And it's commercial or something, sure. Yeah.
All right, well, I'm hitting these. All right.
You are. So far, you're doing all right. All right. This is number four.
Where am I?
Hurry! Get into the tunnel! You'll be safe in there!
Oh, I have no idea. I'm guessing with the voices, it's cartoonish. It sounds like at least one of these people is from The Simpsons. So I'm guessing it's a cartoon or it's an animation of some kind, but I have no idea what it is.
It is. It's anime, and it's Akira from 1988, which is a big cyberpunk Tokyo of 2019 anime feature-length film. So there you go.
All right.
Well. And the last one.
That's what he means by the White Count. David McKeeson is a very dangerous man because he knows that he's dying already.
No, Larry, we're losing
pretty calm
now.
Here right
Larry,
now. There's
back.
Not a...
Meg, what is the distance? How far are you from the Liberty May?
About 2 miles.
Is that considered a safe distance?
No one will say, actually.
Oh, see, I remember this from TV.
Mm-hmm. This is a TV movie, yes.
All I remember is a bunch of guys. It was like a little bit like Failsafe in that there's an abrupt cutoff of a feed. Failsafe was a telephone. You knew Moscow had been destroyed when the telephone died. Mm-hmm. I remember a bunch of guys running either into or out of a boat, and then there was this static. So you knew something had blowed up real good. So it was a nuke somewhere. I have no idea what it was, the name of the thing, but it was
yep. It is called Special Bulletin, and it did come out the same year as that other nuclear winter movie.
The Day After,
yeah. right.
So it was Jason
exactly
Robards,
the same
year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It scared the crap out of everybody, but it didn't last, did it?
No, they had something else to be afraid of. So you did very well. Thank you very much, Magnolia E-Publishing, and we appreciate it very much. Good night, Driftglass. I love you.
I love you, baby.
Bye.